Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Metaphysical Explorations. I'm your host, Stephen Sakellarius. We're not concerned with any kind of hype on this show, and whether or not our guests are famous is incidental. We're looking for the truth, and I've found that each person, in his life and through the process of living, often through intense suffering, has brought up from the mine of his or her experience some jewel of truth. I don't interrogate my guest from a list of questions. I want to enter into a real conversation and give him or her the opportunity to share that jewel with us.
And welcome to Metaphysical Explorations. This is Stephen Sakellarius. We had a little trouble in our premiere, but we are back. And we have with us today Patricia Walsh, who is a graduate of the Jeffrey Wolf Green School of Evolutionary Astrology and is a certified evolutionary astrologer. She is also a certified deep memory process regression practitioner and is the chief U.S. trainer for Dr. Roger Wolger's School of Deep Memory Process. She's the author of Understanding Karmic Complexes, Evolutionary Astrology and Regression Therapy. She's also a contributing author to Insights into Evolutionary Astrology, a diverse collection of essays by prominent astrologers. Combined with astrology, she specializes in multidimensional healing work based in shamanic principles including soul retrieval and fragmentation and spirit releasement, or ancestral and earthbound spirit work. Her focus is in the healing present and past life trauma, synthesizing both intuitive hands-on healing and therapeutic approaches. Patricia, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks.
That's a very interesting combination of astrology and past life therapy, and these are a particular type of astrology and a particular type of past life therapy. Can you start by explaining what the specific type of astrology and what type of past life therapy, and then how you bring them together?
Well, I think their unity point, the place where they converge, is why they work so well together. I kind of say they're kind of like peanut butter and chocolate. They make a Reese's cup. And interestingly, in my own life, I met both of the founders of those paradigms, Jeff Wolf Green with evolutionary astrology and Roger Wolger in deep memory process, in the same year, 12 years ago. So they both came into my life at the same time. I'd been studying Jeffrey's stuff earlier but hadn't worked with him directly. So both of those approaches, let's say one astrology, one regression, deal specifically with the core wounds to the soul, which are traditionally, emotional, mental, traumatic past life imprints, you might say. And that's the same approach that evolutionary astrology takes. It starts from there and works into the present life, which is exactly what past life therapy does.
Now, how much do wounds from past lives influence us now?
You want me to give it a percentage?
No. Many people would think that this is a very esoteric concept, and it really wouldn't have any practical application in my daily life. It might be in some person that has a very strange situation over here. But in other words, how ubiquitous is this? Is what I'm trying to say.
It permeates our consciousness as much as our childhood conditioning does. And it's kind of like, think about your childhood conditioning that you don't remember anymore and how much it shaped you as a person. It's very formative. Your past life experiences are what formed you. Again, you have to accept the premise of many lives of the soul and so on and so forth to get your head around that. But understanding even it just on that level is, you've had many past life selves, and they form, you come in, the soul basically picks up where it left off before. So you come in as a kind of culmination point of all of your past experiences.
Now, in traditional therapy, when they're looking at some kind of a phobia, for example, they go back in. It's known to go back into past lives and look for a trauma. And to me, sometimes it seemed kind of silly because, let's say that this person has a fear of water, and they would go back into their childhood, and oh yes, there was a time that slipped and, you know, fell into a puddle or something, and their head stayed under a little while, but it didn't seem like, you know, they were in the bathtub or something, but it just doesn't seem enough to terrorize them for their whole lifetime. Although that would be the interpretation. Well, we've got the source of it now, you know, we've got the interpretation. But from this longer point of view that includes past lives, could that just be a trigger that triggered something that actually happened before that makes more sense?
Well, it works both ways. We can incur new imprints and traumas in our current life that don't have a past life component, although I think that's actually relatively rare from my perspective. And not just my perspective, my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, when we have an overreaction to something, it generally is saying, I mean, that's the reason why the process that we use, we call deep memory process. We take the assumption, let's say, or again, this is based on working with thousands of people's psyches, that most past present life experiences have some past life component to them. And especially when you have an overreaction in the current life, that, like, just exactly like your example, you might, you know, have splashed in some water, but, you know, it was much more severe in the past life when you drowned. So all of those old fears rush forward in the current moment, even though the current moment may not be life-threatening, it feels life-threatening. People commonly feel this kind of stuff when they go to, you know, there's a common fear of public speaking, of being humiliated, of being exposed. And again, you know, we just have to look at human history to see how many people were dragged out in front of the village and executed, right? You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of these kind of common things. You're just going about your day-to-day life, and these, you know, what we always say in our work is it's the irrational fears. And they're irrational because they don't make sense in the current timeline, like why certain people have certain relationship patterns or work patterns or things like that. You know, they always fail, or they, you know, never can find money or something like that. These long-standing patterns can't have their root in a much deeper memory that doesn't belong to this life.
So they might be irrational in terms of your circumstances now to stand up in front of a group of 12 people and be terrified as though you were going to be stoned to death. But if you find where the fear is really coming from, it's actually perfectly rational.
It is perfectly rational, but it's irrational to the current day consciousness.
Yeah.
And that's where we know in past life work that you're onto something. When somebody comes in with that kind of irrational, and that's the point where, in general, I'm not saying always, but in general, modern psychotherapy can't address those kinds of issues because they're not dealing with them on the level of the way that the psyche is holding them.
Can you take us through a session, kind of a typical session or an imaginary session, from the time that somebody walks into a complaint and then what you do with that person, how it might unfold?
Well, generally there's an interview period where we talk about getting, you know, if it's a first-time client, I want to know background about them, I want to know their childhood, medical history, different kinds of things. But the first question I always ask is, what do you feel is bringing you here? And quite frequently, the person already knows. They may not know what it is, but they know what's bothering them. It's like when you go to the dentist, you're showing him the one tooth that hurts.
Mm.
So most people that come in to do this kind of work, they already know. They're like, look, I've seen it. Men always leave me. That's one thing I say to people just as a byproduct. If you want to start to understand some of your past life stories, just finish the statements, I always and I never.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and you can apply that to anything. So you can examine, you can do your own life review and see, fill in those blanks. You know, I never have enough money, I always have.
Yeah.
And those are already, there's clusters of past life stories there. So basically I start with people that way, And then we start to focus in on the very particular thing that we've isolated as the most pertinent thing to work with in the moment. You know, what they might be most triggered with, what's causing them the most pain, dis-ease, whatever. And then focus that in, and there's a way that we have many inductions. There's lots of ways into past life stories. So using whatever particular induction fits for what they're presenting, and then going into the past life. So in our work, though, 50, and this is different. This is a little bit where DMP, deep memory process, diverges from the standard hypnotherapeutic model.
Mm-hmm.
Let's
clarify that first. Are you using hypnosis in this?
No.
Okay.
No, but you know that's also another discussion because
right, I'm aware of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do
trance
they maybe
state
get
is
into
trance
it?
State, but let's put us in the category of I would say we work with trance state therapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you are. You know, you are in a, I'm using air quotes, altered state, but we don't use standard hypnotic induction.
Right.
Okay? We actually go a lot deeper than that because mm-hmm. we retrieve memories that are even below kind of the threshold of the mental imagery. Anyway.
Well, how do you get into the, how do you get into the deeper memory?
That's what I'm saying. There's a lot, we have a lot of different inductions. There's just different ways into stories, you know. So depending upon or different ways to access past life characters, depending on the way that it's surfacing in the person's life.
Right. Can you give us an example of how one might work?
A very standard one is to use what you could call a mental, emotional, somatic bridge. Is that if you get the character, and again, it's the past life character that kind of comes out during the interview, like somebody mm-hmm. is, I have a classic one. I mean, some of them are just insanely obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I had a woman come in, you know, talking about her relationships, and she said that she had noticed the pattern that she always sabotages as soon as they get, as soon as she starts to fall in love. She said she would do something to sabotage the relationship, either cheat on him or push him away or do something. And she'd seen it all of her life, and she was sick of it. So she said, I want to focus on this. So when one way that I get somebody to do it is we need an emotion, a thought, and a body sensation.
Mm.
And that's like forming the Google search of what you're going to type into the person's psyche and open up the very specific file.
Right.
You know, this is like laser surgery. Rather than just trip around in the astral plane and pull up anything, I want to hear what's bothering her, and then I want to laser focus on what is that specific life.
It's like the doctor's finger that points says, where does it hurt? You know.
Exactly. Yeah, it's exactly that. So she started telling me, you know, so I had her close her eyes or whatever, and I said, okay. And this is a very simple technique, but you know, you have to see it in action to see how rapid it is. I said to her, let's imagine your last relationship and how it felt when you started to fall in love. And so she's kind of telling me, yes, it was like that. And then she said, and then I start to get anxious. I said, okay, let's focus on the anxiety. And we open it up, and I said, no matter how irrational, if that anxiety had words, what would it say? Mm. And she said, I'm going to die, and she started bawling, crying.
Right there,
that's the past life self.
Yeah.
I mean, it's completely irrational to the current
that.
Life.
Yeah, but it's right there.
It's right there. Yeah. So then I have her lay down on the mat, and now we're already talking to the past life self. And and her story was that her lover, newly in love and, you know, got pregnant, and then he went off to war. And he never came back, and she had a baby and went into a depression and actually hung herself. So you could imagine in her psyche, in her past life psyche, which is now carried over to the present, she imprinted it that deep love means death.
So she's playing this over and over.
She's playing it over and over. The psyche is continuing to repeat the trauma. I mean, that's a very common, that's true in modern day trauma theory. I mean, you know, this is Freud's basic work was on repetition compulsion and understanding, you know, how the psyche continues to recreate traumas in miniature or in metaphor so as to try to gain some mastery over it.
So there's models for this in contemporary psychology, but they just don't include past lives. They don't get
back
to...
Well, that's where they slam the door shut. I mean, even some transpersonal forms. Mm. You know, Jung came up against that. Jung came up against a lot of things that we delve kind of boldly into now, but because of the conventions of his time, he backed away from.
Now, let me ask you the $64,000 question, and that is, how many of the complaints, the mysterious complaints that we have in today's life, that we buy drugs for and we go to, you know, have all kinds of procedures done, how many of those things could be addressed through past life therapy, including physical problems?
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen it all. I've seen it all from, you know, broken hearts to, like I said, relationship patterns to people, you know, changing their, certainly removing fears and phobias can instantly change somebody's life, but on the very physical level too. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, interesting disease turnarounds or even I had one myself. I had a, what do they call that? I had an MRI done, and all the doctors were amazed. An inflamed disc, a bulging disc, and I couldn't move, and it was horrible, and nothing brought it on. It was not a physical thing I did. Anyway, the point was I got an MRI, and they started talking surgery, and I was thinking to myself, no way. And they were like, this is the only, you know, otherwise, blah, blah, you know, all the doom and gloom stuff. And I kind of went home and I called up a couple of my colleagues and said, I need a regression. And fortunately, they came by and they regressed me. And I went into a pretty horrific back-breaking torture session, past life. And literally the next day, I was completely normal. And when I went back to the doctor, he was like, that's not really possible.
Now, how much could that be done? Is that a fluke, or do you think that could be done pretty quickly?
I see it, you know, I see it consistently. Again, if you work on that level, nothing is absolute. I don't, you know, and I think anybody that comes along and tells you my thing is the next best thing to slice bread and I can cure everything had a past life as a snake oil salesman. And I wouldn't believe that, you know. I mean, I wouldn't go there. So I'm not saying that about past life therapy, but I am saying I've seen it a lot in this work. I've experienced it myself. I've seen people have not just... you know, emotional turnarounds or psychic breakthroughs or, I mean, you name it all, but, you know, physical reversals of things.
Amazing. And this is, see, I'm really interested in the sociology of reincarnation. So what fascinates me is to watch a society that has something like this that's so powerful. And so, because you're talking about one session, two sessions?
Yeah.
It's so powerful, and yet the whole society is so adamant about ignoring reincarnation that this wonderful thing is just they won't look at it. They won't, you know. But I remember Roger Wilgard. He wanted everybody to call him Roger in the you know, I attended one of his workshops. So I call him Roger because he asked me to call him Roger.
Yeah, everybody called him Roger.
I took him literally. I said, hey, you know, if you say that, I will. But I remember him. Now I'm losing my train of thought. But well, I lost my train of thought. Let's put it that way. So it'll come back to me. But
you know, I had a woman with infertility issues. I'm just thinking of one case that she was unable to conceive and was trying in vitro. And I don't know if you know, but in vitro is something like 20,000 a pop. She'd had two attempts already. And, you know, I guess they blew, like, whatever it was, $30,000 on these two attempts. And she came to me, and she's like, we're going to do it one more time because we really want a kid, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I'm just kind of like, this is my plea for help thing. And so I explored with her just on the regular level because a lot of times, you know, well, you know, as the Republicans say, a woman's body can shut that stuff down, right? No, I'm just sorry. you know, that I had to check is certain, were there difficulties in the relationship?
Right,
was there
right.
some current life? So I checked all of those boxes with her, and it really wasn't apparent that there was anything overt or even subconscious on that level.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we went for the past life component. And in the past life, she was eviscerated. She was a tribal woman, like,
oh.
I don't know, like even an African tribe.
Oh.
And she was pregnant and captured, and they wanted the baby for some kind of ritual.
Oh.
They just cut the baby out while she was alive and threw it in the fire, and she watched it in terror and died from blood loss watching the poor baby. So, of course, you know, her whole, let's put it this way, her whole psychic body was just frozen against having that kind, you know, having that kind of experience again.
Don't do that again.
I know, exactly. So, you know, we worked with it, and that's what I was going to say. In our work, remembering the past life or reliving the past life is only 50% of the therapy. The other 50% is reworking it in the afterlife.
Was she able to conceive, this woman?
Yeah. Yeah, she instantly, I mean, we did, that's what, the point that I was going to make is that in her session, we did a lot of work in the afterlife of, you know, healing the spirit body, letting her re-meet the spirit of that infant, and, you know, letting that past life self know it's over. Because in our philosophy or in our experience, those past, these aren't just mental patterns. These are literally soul fragments of ours that are still stuck in that place. She was literally, you would say, in from shamanic perspective, there was a part of her soul still laying by that fire in terror.
Yes.
Right? Frozen in terror.
Yeah.
So by going back and getting that part into the afterlife and then helping that part to heal, that's where the real relief comes. That's what hypnotherapy misses. Most hypnotherapeutic models will run you through the past life and then start making present life connections, which it's true. You get a mental catharsis. You get
you get the aha.
You get the aha, but you don't get the emotional catharsis. And again, I'm generalizing because I'm not, you know. But they don't do extensive afterlife work. And that's 50% of our process. And then we bring it to the present life, which is the other, you know, 20% of the process.
So, until
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, until they feel whole again, in other words, emotionally, it's not really done yet.
It's not just emotionally, it's also physically, too, because even though you might say, well, our past life bodies died, and so they're, you know, in the ground or wherever they are, but the point is we have a subtle etheric body that is a template for the physical body, and we have an emotional body, and we have a mental body, and we have a spiritual body. Those are all separate, subtle bodies, and they each carry imprints life to life, and they each carry them differently, which means in order to reverse them, to reverse a mental pattern, you need to deal with that like through a mental catharsis, which is usually an aha.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional catharsis is totally different than mental catharsis. It involves releasing the blocked, suppressed, repressed emotions.
Mm-hmm.
It also sometimes brings up the counter emotion. Physical catharsis is a big part of our process, and that undoes what the etheric body's been holding, and that relates to your question about physical things that are carried over, like people with neck problems that were hung, or, you know, scars on the body that represent past life fatal wounds, things like that, or organ problems, whatever it is. So in our process, we do all of those. And in the case of the woman that I'm talking about, she went and did in vitro, and bang, she was pregnant right away.
Yeah, okay, was okay, because she wasn't going to get gutted and, you know, have a baby. This example makes it pretty clear that some of these things are not for the, I mean, what I mean to say is that some of these things are horrible.
You're
going to have to go through something very intensely painful. Do you find that people hold back, that basically they have to get to the point where they just can't stand it anymore before they will go through this? Or are some people more adventurous and say, hey, you know, do it?
Well, don't you see that true in human consciousness? We're a crisis-oriented kind of consciousness, right?
Yeah.
We don't really deal with things until they get to crisis point. I'm just generalizing. But in general, as a society, aren't we kind of like that? If we can push them under the rug until we have to deal with it, we don't deal with it.
So,
But yeah, most of the time people get to a point of exasperation. They've tried everything, you know. But that's not always. I mean, a lot of people that are more, and again I'm using air quotes, conscious, they jump into their evolution. They jump into what bothers them. They care about mining their consciousness for gold, you know. So yeah, it takes different types. But yeah. Yeah.
But what do you do with somebody like me who's very much in my head? And I would resist this by talking about it. You know, I would talk. Yeah, I remember this, and you know, I would talk and talk. Because when I was in this workshop, Roger did get me down into some of the feelings, but it still was just the beginning. And if I was really working with him in an actual session instead of a seminar, you know, I'm sure he would have, you know, bypassed it. But how do you get past somebody's head?
Well, that's something we teach. That's something I teach in our training. There's a lot of ways to do it, actually. it might seem difficult to you, but if you're a mentally defended person, which, you know, welcome to most of the Western world, right? We've put the logical linear brain on a pedestal, and that's our current God, and we're just going to worship that for the next, let's hope we're not going to, but we have for the last several thousand years or whatever. You know, 100 years at least, let's say.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, if everybody has defenses. In fact, our work, when people learn our work, it's a 2-year training, you know, 4 or 5 day modules. It's not a weekend, you know. And that's the big difference, again, between sometimes hypnotherapeutic training. They don't train people to deal with these deep levels of trauma because their trainings are often only a weekend or at the most 5 days. You know, one module of training. So, and that's fine. If you're not going to teach people how to do it, they shouldn't be doing it. And that's fine. So a lot of them do work on the mental level only, and that's okay, because that's what they've been taught to do. But our work is really wanting to deal with these deep emotional and even physical past life traumas, and that takes certain skill to do that. I always tell my students, expect defense in this work.
Yeah.
This isn't, you know, this isn't a tiptoe through your past lives.
Because I think as a, you know, as a patient or as a client, you want to get to it, but you really don't want to. But you really want to, you know. So.
We all have patterns of defense that we've built up that served us when we needed them.
Right.
You know, somebody who was abused as a child developed maybe dissociative defenses or, you know, numbing defenses. And that is what helped them survive that.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the human psyche is that the psyche doesn't let go of the defense. So then here you are 40 years later and you're still avoiding people.
Yeah.
You know, you're still feeling numb. You can't, whatever it is, you know, you're still dissociative. So that's where and when we've built up many past life defenses, they're even deeper in the level of the subconscious. We feel their effect, but we don't know why we have them.
So let me ask you, if you go out on the street, you know, in a busy city street, and you're walking up and down, and there's people, do all those people have these horrible, horrible things in their past lives that are just, you know, sitting there influencing them? You know, I mean, it's a picture, you know, all these people have all had, you know?
You know what? Let's take it out of the individual into the collective and look at it. Just simply look at the statement that history repeats itself.
Mm.
If you look at us collectively, like, you know, step out of our individual psyche and pretend we're floating over the planet and we're looking at the human psyche collectively, don't you see us replaying the trauma of war over and over and over? It's like we're still trying to work it out collectively. We're still so traumatized because, in whatever past life, the lover went away and he never came back, or somebody was killed on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the individual stories within that also. And, I mean, collectively we say it all the time. History repeats itself. What do you think that is?
Right. So it's
That's
true.
That's past life replay to me.
Past life, yeah. Yeah, so it's true for probably most or all of us.
Yeah,
it's wonderful, and I'd love to get into more of that. We're kind of coming up to the end of our time here, I wanted to ask you one question. The skeptics will say, I think that the biggest skeptical argument for all of this would be, okay, well, somebody has something that's bothering them, and they just create a fantasy story that represents the thing, and then they feel better. What would you say to that?
Well, there's a difference. Well, again, there's a difference between higher imagination and fantasy. But putting that aside, well, first thing is, who cares? if somebody can come in and make up a story and, you know, alleviate themselves of a lifelong pattern, God bless them. You know, because there's more. I mean, most of our. Did you know the percentage of our medicine that's actually placebo, that actually has no chemical basis for the outcome that it provides in the body?
Right.
It's something like 25% of medication. So there's that level of it. I mean, but, you know, I don't really practice at that level because I've seen over and over and over not just the immediacy of people able to make rapid connections to their current life, but then the kind of what I call the domino effect of what happens after they work with the past life story, how you know, these amazing things come into their life that confirm that their experience was real. And, you know, some of that is historical stuff. I've researched some of my own, and I've found things that I learned in past lives that I had no way of knowing that I was able to research and find out were true.
Look, can you give us a couple examples? I actually can't add and subtract, so we have more time than what I thought we did.
Okay.
You know, what can I say? Because it tells me time left, and I wasn't reading it right. So we got some time. So I have become a reincarnation researcher working on one of my own cases, which is not a therapy-based case. Although, as I told you when we talked privately, I've gotten into some aspects of therapy with it. You know, I had some of the benefits of therapy, obviously not all of them. But tell us about some of the verifications that you've had in delving into some of these.
I have a few of my personal ones, but one that jumped out at me because the confirmation came in such an interesting way. I was in another civilization, Earth civilization, and I didn't really know what it was. I described the people as Greek-like, but they were small, dark, and Greek-like. Mm-hmm. But they weren't Greek. They had a Greek society. Mm-hmm. Blah, 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 a Greek-like society, so on and so forth. They were trading in tin and metals, and I had come from a Norse culture. I was a male in that life and joined them from this Norse culture because my sister was married into there, and I was some kind of warrior son thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up liking them and staying with them and learning about their culture. And then at one point, I warned them. I remember saying that they had this trading partner that they shouldn't trust and that they seemed to have ulterior motives and blah, 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 blah. And because I was on some political council. But anyway, they didn't listen. And then they were sieged. And I literally saw the siege. I saw the wall. I saw the bay. They pleaded with me to go back to my Norse land and get ships to help defend them. I didn't want to go because I hated my father. I ended up going. I came back, and we were actually closed in the harbor. We were trapped, and everybody was kind of massacred. And I remember seeing what I saw, the city burning and the siege and the wall that had been built and blah, blah, blah. Years later, I was reading a book on the fall of Phoenicia, which is exactly what that was. And again, all of those things that came through to me, they were master navigators, but not shipbuilders, and they learned shipbuilding from alliances with the Norse.
Yeah.
They were tin traders; that was their primary thing, and the Persians were the ones that overran them.
Mm.
And they did it. They started with the trade alliance, but then they got overrun or something like that. And, mm-hmm. and on top of it all, this book actually described physically the fall of Phoenicia, and they described the wall and the bay and how there was an ambush in the bay of ships. And I mean, I was reading it going, I can't believe this.
Yeah, it was really point for point.
pretty much point for point, yeah.
So,
you know, that kind of thing, and that happens. It happens a lot, you know. It happens a lot with people. But, you know, to me, those levels, that's not even interesting to me. I mean, I know that some people find that fascinating, where you can prove something, or to me, that's so not fascinating. What is fascinating is when somebody's life changes.
Yeah.
You know, when something is healed. I'm in it for the therapeutic value.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's real soul medicine. You know, that's just it's deep beyond words.
Have you found a past life basis yourself for healing as a healer? Have you found past lives as a healer that would tend to lead to what you're doing now?
Yeah, I think a lot of people in the modern, and you know, this gets back to, again, souls incarnating in groups, and
mm-hmm.
you know, that's an old esoteric idiom that souls do incarnate in groups, which is what causes a kind of certain collective consciousness at a certain time. And I mean, right now on the planet, I know of several kind of, I guess you would put air quotes, soul groups,
mm-hmm.
and there are a lot of the inquisited back, and a lot of, and you see it in popular, you know, there's a resurgence in paganism and shamanism.
Mm-hmm.
There has been since the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those souls that were incarnated at that time that worked with natural medicine, you know, that worked with the herbs and plants, and, you know, a lot of them are reincarnated now. So, which is why we have a resurgence of, herbalism and naturopathy. Let's say
they're literally the same groups come back.
Yeah,
so
they're the same.
Pressing their agenda. Yeah.
I found
when I was trying to prove reincarnation, and I was interacting with other people who were also trying to prove reincarnation, that quite a few of them remembered past lives as Celtic priests or connected
with Celtic
priests. For some reason, all the Celts have come back with an agenda that they want to prove reincarnation.
Well, you
to
know
the
who
Western
else is
world.
Back in Storm? And we saw this, and speaking of collective events, I actually knew this before it happened, and I won't get into the story because it's way too long,
okay.
But in brief, I was a member of an order that was part of the Crusades.
Mm.
And I went into that past life in the beginning of 2001 is when that past life came up for me.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in the spirit world afterwards, you know, doing the big overview and talking, you know, after I'd done all the healing from that life and blah, 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 and I was in the spirit world afterwards, a spiritual mentor came to me in the spirit world and said, "You are all here again." Now, I thought that they meant the order, which I also could confirm because I met lots of people from that order, so I know. Mm-hmm. Up until that point, what they meant, because the morning of September 11th, when I was standing there watching the TV in disbelief with, you know, millions of other
mm-hmm.
people, I was in Connecticut, so I could actually see the smoke coming across
mm-hmm.
Long Island Sound from my window. I heard that voice in my head that said, "You are all here again." And then I said, "Oh, my God." What
mm.
they meant is that the whole Crusades, I mean, the whole scene
oh,
is set.
Yeah.
Now, here's an interesting thing I found out later, which is,
oh,
again,
okay.
think about it.
Yeah, I'm
think about,
what
no,
you're saying.
No, think about it, because the next day Bush comes out and says it's a crusade. That's
yes.
the headline.
Yes.
A week later, Time magazine has a picture of Ashcroft in Templar garb,
mm-hmm.
right? One of
mm-hmm.
the lead groups in the Crusades. I found out even later, this is so interesting, Bin Laden said when he went from Afghanistan back to Saudi Arabia, remember he was, this is before, this is what pissed him off, this is what got the bee in his bonnet, you know,
right.
he went back to Saudi Arabia wanting to be accepted as a kind of hero, and he kind of saw himself as somebody who could unite the Arab world,
mm.
and they dissed him. Mm. He said to them, "I am like Saladin," who was the Muslim leader in the
mm.
Crusades,
mm.
the hero
mm.
of the Crusades on the Muslim
mm.
side. So think about it. Everybody was back, and we were replaying that.
Yes. So how many of these events are replayed? I guess all of them, really, are probably replayed.
Well, I think that, you know, huge collective events and souls that the amount of people that were burned,
yeah.
You know, as herbalists or midwives or whatever, is an astronomical number of souls. There's a lot of Holocaust people back. I mean, what I find in my practice, actually, a lot of people reincarnated almost immediately, you know, that suffered through traumas of the Holocaust.
Do people reincarnate more quickly when they've been through some traumatic death? I've read that.
Well, I've read that, too, and I don't say that there's any. I've seen all different kinds of things. The reason why it makes sense from the trauma perspective fits with a lot of the Eastern teaching, specifically the Tibetan teaching of the afterlife, that if your soul is very laden and earthbound, it pulls the consciousness back into reincarnation.
Right. So if you've been violently killed and you're very angry and you're very focused on that, then you could get pulled right back in other words.
You're like pulled right because it's almost like you never left the earth.
Yes.
The density of your consciousness is so weighted, you know, by the unresolved complexes, and add 100 lives onto that, you know, which means I think people are reincarnating a lot quicker now, probably, than they used to.
Mm. Now, I've got a couple questions that I've been holding off on, and they relate to my own past life, not specifically, but just principles that have come up. And one of them is, in this past life in the 19th century, I was an abolitionist. Okay, so I was really adamant about trying to stop slavery, and in particular, I think what happened is that I saw a slave market, and I saw them separating couples, and it just incensed me. This was in a hypnotic regression that I, you know, remembered this. But then, sometime later, I said, but wait a minute, I had a regression session much, much earlier where I remembered a much, much earlier lifetime where I had been the perpetrator, where I had separated couples and probably had been like a slave, you know, had slaves, you know. So I saw that it made sense that I would reincarnate in the 19th century and hate slavery and you know, do everything I could to try to stop it because I was trying to cleanse my soul of this thing. How often do you see that if you go back far enough, you find that, you know, hey, we talked about the perpetrators or the perps, you know, how often do you get back to that?
Well, let's put it that I could put that one in a percentage, 100%. But I'll say 100% in the context of mature souls. Let's say if you've been around the block a few times, you know, if you're an older soul than say a younger soul just coming in that's only had 100 past lives as opposed to 1,000 past lives, you know, this gets to Jung's principle where he talks about, you know, the balancing of opposites and the marriage of opposites. Mm-hmm. From the soul's perspective, once you taste an experience, let's say, be it about slavery, the soul will then, and in my language, experiment with all the different things of what does that mean?
Mm.
Being a slave, owning a slave, capturing slaves, you know. It just simply, what I would say is experiments with that so as to have gained experience on every single aspect of it that it then kind of tucks away and says, okay, done with that. You know,
so once you pooch into an area, your soul is going to insist on really understanding
it. And there are certain cycles, and especially, I mean, the warrior cycle is a very interesting one I've seen play out for people over thousands of years. You know, where they set off on the warrior path and they're kind of bloodlust and vengeance and, you know, and they go through certain stages of kind of breaking through the warrior cycle or evolving the warrior cycle. But definitely the victim-perpetrator thing, you know, they're two sides of the same spectrum. I would say just about, and a lot of our current life, I had one funny story of a woman who, I mean, so literal, she worked for Save the Children, and in her past life, and she was a compulsive savior, you know, you know, people that, you know, there's a difference between, like, doing something and doing it from a deep-laden guilt complex, which then gives you a compulsion to do it, right? So she was a compulsive savior. And anyway, we went back to her past life, and she was one of the women, speaking of crusades, one of the children who led a crusade. I don't know if you... And I actually researched it later because I didn't even know about it.
I vaguely heard of this,
Yeah, I, didn't know about it, but she was this young, I don't know, French girl, and she was sort of Joan of Arcish, where maybe she was a boy. I don't remember. She was a German boy, and she just had visions and started talking to other children, and then before you knew it, it was like wildfire, and all of these children followed them to the Holy Land, and they all got captured and sent off into slavery and slaughtered. And this one who started it, who felt all divinely inspired, just watched everybody get massacred, you know, and taken into slavery, and lived with the guilt of that for the rest of his little life. So what does she do today? She works for Save the Children.
It's wonderful. Yeah.
You know, in our work, we say you can't make this stuff up, okay? Again, you know, back to your thing about the skeptics or whatever, you know, a woman who comes to me about a compulsive savior complex, and, you know, we get into that kind of story, and then she starts comparing it to her current life. Does it matter if she made that up?
Yeah.
I mean, the resonance of it is so almost, and usually that is what happens, that people sit up and they go, I never could have made that up.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and then you have some that are verified historically on top of that. So.
Well, that's what I mean, and it is. It's almost like I know for myself, and again, I see it with my clients all the time. You know, my psyche just isn't creative enough. I mean, my conscious mind isn't creative enough to make up some of the stuff that correlates so perfectly.
Right.
You know, when I sit up back up in my waking consciousness and go, oh, my God, I couldn't have made that up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Now, you talked about what you call cycles or scenarios. One that fascinates me that I think also relates to myself. Suppose that that someone is very gullible, you know, and historically this person that I've researched was known to be gullible, and I also have been gullible. You know, it's an issue. But I think if I went back far enough, I would find that I was like a con artist, that I manipulated people. So let's suppose that, okay, you've manipulated people, and then it comes back on you and you start having these experiences of being fooled. Let's suppose that you're in a situation or a relationship or, you know, an employee somewhere, and you were fooled the whole lifetime. You didn't know that you were being fooled. You didn't even realize it until you died and maybe had your life review or something. So, you know, when you incarnate back again, it's like you don't get it. You know, you still don't understand it. So I'm wondering, are there situations where you know, the aha experience would be, wait a minute, that wasn't even what I thought it was in the first place, and then you'd be released from it. You know, do you run into that kind of scenario? In other words, where the healing is not necessarily from, you know, reliving a trauma like a physical trauma or violence, it's reliving what you might call truth violence or having been lied to, and that was the violence.
Well, but what you're talking about, see, this is the thing. This is what I was saying, and I know it's hard to get this across in, you know, several sentences, but the mental body imprints trauma mentally, the emotional body emotionally, the physical body physically.
Mm-hmm.
They're all interconnected.
Mm.
But they're not necessarily always resonant on every level. What you described is a mental trauma.
Mm.
It's in one way, you might say, it's a mental-only level trauma. In fact, I put that even further out than mental. I call that a psychic trauma.
Mm.
When somebody's been fooled, right, or they've been naive, or that's actually a psychic level of wounding called disillusionment.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself is complex.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a kind of mental psychic level complex which needs to be dealt with on that level. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Doesn't necessarily mean that particular imprint that you're talking about being gullible does not necessarily mean that it started because you were a snake oil salesman.
Mm-hmm.
The initial wound where that kind of complex started could have been from some massive disillusionment,
mm-hmm.
that the psyche never recovered from it, and it just continues to repeat it over
right.
and over. It's like a vacuum. It's a skip in the record. It just keeps going back there. The times when we see real reversals are when there's guilt involved. Guilt and guilt that that causes people to be over responsible or saviors, or when we totally throw something away, like for example, somebody who, you know, is slaughtering people and then they feel remorse and they say, I'll never do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And then they become a pacifist for the next, you know, 500 lifetimes.
Right.
And, but the universe does not want anybody, again, as I see the way the soul balances itself out, it doesn't want to remain fixed in any polarity.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
somebody who's become an extreme pacifist has disowned their warrior.
Yes.
And the universe will be challenging them on that, usually
yes.
by they're drawing violent people into their life.
That's
right?
Very powerful, yeah, very powerful, because we're all stuck in these polarities and we don't realize it. But you're saying the soul will not allow us to stay stuck in them.
No, it's seeking a kind of wholeness. The soul is seeking, you know, this is the basic principle of what we have in our conscious and what we have in our shadow. Whatever we've polarized in our conscious mind that we consider as us, our ego identity, my I, you can be sure that there's a shadow to that, right? And real spiritual growth and real spiritual maturity, I feel, and it's not just me, I mean, this is the basis of a lot of transpersonal psychology, is that we need to embrace our opposites. We need to find out what's in the shadow. So if I'm a goody two-shoes, you know, I may need to find out. But it's not always so black and white. Like if I'm self-sacrificing, it may be because, you know, whatever, in some life I misjudged myself as being. That's where I see a lot of it. That's where this black and white, you know, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, that's a Western notion of karma. That is not an Eastern notion of karma. That's only one slice of karma, right? The balancing out, the perpetrator, victim, blah, blah, blah. A lot of it, I'd say 90% of our karma is where we have, like, you know, woman who was a herbalist and the plague comes and she can't save the village and she's watching everybody die one by one and totally guilting herself about it. And then at the end of that life or before that says, all of this healing is useless and I throw it out and I'll never use it again.
Never do it again. Yeah.
Never do it again, right?
So they're now she's polarized.
Exactly. Now she's defended against something, and she's got a huge wad of guilt. You know, and a lot of the times we judge ourselves so horribly, but that kind of thing stays with us, and that's the kind of woman that would come to me today, you know, saying I feel like I want to be a healer, or whatever it is, an artist, whatever creative expression it is, but she gets totally blocked and she gets sabotaged, and you know, all kinds of things manifest on that path. It's because of that kind of life. So it isn't necessarily always you did something bad and then something bad happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's too black and white.
Now, those kind of decisions, those early decisions, those I'm thinking in TA and Eric Byrne, I think they talk about those kind of early. But I know in humanistic psychology, they talk about the early decisions. You know, I'll never do this again. But they don't, again, if they could take it into the past lives, it would suddenly become so much more powerful, wouldn't it?
Well, we would find the literal, you know, person that, and the reason why.
Yes, the one who actually made the decision.
The one who actually made the decision.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never, whatever. And really, I found, I had a healer early on in my life who said to me, the universe doesn't like absolutes.
Mm.
You know, so don't ever tell the universe never, because the universe is going to go, really?
Mm. Right.
Never say never, I guess is a good one.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
But my point, even in that little example that I gave you, so you can see the difference between if you run a story at the mental level and you get the, oh, I'll never do that again, but you don't get the emotional guilt, and you don't run it on all of those levels, and you don't facilitate healing on all of those levels, you're not going to clear the complex fully.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get parts of it, like people go, oh, well, now I understand why, but it may not change the pattern in their life. Because if you haven't worked with the emotions within the guilt complex, which may be remorse or grief or whatever it is, you know, that needs to be reversed also.
The kind of scenario that I was trying to get to was something it seems to me I've seen over and over. People get in a relationship and they think it's one way, and it really isn't, and they just but it manifests, you know. I mean, the person really wasn't serious, for example, and goes off, and they just can't believe that they weren't serious. And it seemed to me, not having done therapy with the person, but it seems to me that what they're really remembering emotionally is the past life when they were fooled. In other words, they spent the whole lifetime with a person, and circumstances kept them together, and they never got it that person really wasn't serious the whole time. You know, so now the next lifetime comes around, and now the circumstances are not holding them together. The person acts like he was going to anyway, and, you know, takes off because, you know, they're not rich anymore. There's no reason to stay around, whatever it is. But they can't accept it because they're still reacting to him as though he was the past. Does that make sense?
Well, so it gets back to...
That's the fool's thing I'm talking about.
Yeah, it gets back to that we feel our past life character's affect many times, but we don't know the story.
Right.
When I say affect, I mean their thoughts, their feelings, their terrors, their pains. When we're confronted with a like scenario in the current life, it's almost like it wakes up that memory. Let's just say they're sleeping in you, and
mm-hmm.
then you meet somebody who, you know, that's another one that can trigger past life memories, is meeting people you knew before.
Mm-hmm.
But let's take it out of that realm and just say, you know, you get into a situation that it's almost like, you know, all of a sudden the past life character wakes up in you and they're looking out your eyes at that
mm-hmm.
situation.
And you don't realize it. You don't realize you're reacting.
Well, you feel it, but you don't realize it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, there are things, I call it falling into the karmic fog. When we just kind of mindlessly, no matter how much we don't want to, it's like we get swept up into some fog and we just act compulsively.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when our patterns have us. And that's why I'm saying some self-examination of I always and I never is a good starting point to find out what are some of the dictums, what are some
yeah.
of the, you know, long-standing threads that run through your life. Those are each of those can be a complex.
Now, let me ask you this: are there dangers in terms of doing this yourself, or, you know, a friend reads a book on it and says, "I can do this. Let's try it out." You know, are there dangers in not going to a professional?
Well, you can't really regress yourself. I mean, you can journey and you can, I mean, I do some of my own past life work, but it's just like psychology, you know, you can only analyze yourself so much. You
right,
can't get
right.
yourself past your own defenses.
But what about
so
practicing
this
on a friend, you know, lay, you know, practitioners, things like that.
Well, you know, I don't advocate doing anything surface. Because I just don't work that way in my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I guess, you know, I would say that if people do exercises or they even, I don't do group regression specifically for that reason, because I don't want the responsibility of triggering something.
Yeah.
And if I don't have the time to hang out and bring it to completion, I don't want to open it up, you know.
Right, you want to do a thorough job with it.
Well,
yeah.
And I've had a lot of people come to me, actually, that have gone to group regressions and been traumatized by them.
Oh, really?
Because everybody else was floating off as Cleopatra. And I mean, I had one woman, distinctly jumps into my mind, that she was stoned to death, and she went into the stoned to death memory mm-hmm. while everybody else was floating off on some Pacific island or something.
Yeah.
And she's the only one, like, totally traumatized, and she was traumatized for that for like a year.
Oh my gosh, but
she
didn't feel like she could tell everybody because it would spoil the party, I guess.
Or whatever, or she was crying and everybody else was, you know, whatever everybody else was doing, she was in shaking and trauma. It can happen. I mean, I don't take any of this lightly, but then again, you know, I've done an extensive amount of training and I've worked with several thousand people. So, you know, it isn't a parlor game to me. At least that's me.
If someone wanted to get trained in this work, how would they initiate that?
Well, you know, there's lots of trainings out there. I mean, like I said, we offer, Wolger Training offers its own training program. You know, a basis in hypnotherapy is also good to have with this work. And again, when I made that statement before about hypnotherapy, I'm only saying that in some, in a lot of, but not all of them, but in a lot of the hypnotherapy programs, they're teaching so many different aspects that they, that past lives is only one thing, you know.
Mm.
They're, so when you get a hypnotherapy certification, you'll get a taste of how to
I
do
see.
Past lives.
Right,
but
right.
But it doesn't specialize in it. We're like the specialists, you know.
Give us some contact information for people that might be listening or might listen to the archives.
Well, you can go to my website, which is healthepast.com. It's pretty direct, Heal the Past. Or you can go to the existing Deep Memory Process Council website, which is the continuation of Roger's work of, you know, which I'm a representative on the council. And that's deepmemoryprocess.com. And lots of Roger's articles are on there.
And we don't know what council that might have been in the past, but we know what it is now.
I'm sure it was a council of bandits or something.
Possibly.
Yeah. Old alchemists, or I don't know, I see us sitting somewhere in the Medici Tower or something, right?
Old books lying around, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Patricia, thank you so very much for joining me on this new venture here, and I know you have a busy schedule, but I really appreciate you taking time for this.
Well, thanks. It was fun. Good to talk.
Okay. On these shows now, I am going to be closing the show, leading out with some of my own music. Of course, we don't want to use copyrighted music here. So this is stuff that I've created in GarageBand software. I'm not a great composer, but this is just for fun. And this is one I just did recently for this show. Thank you so much for joining us, and I hope that you will join us again next week at the same time. We will have Captain Robert Snow, who tells us about his past life regression and how he proved it. Thanks for joining us. Good night.